morning, everyone. This is Authors on the Air, and I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. This is my second broadcast today, but it is going to be special because my friend Tim Hallinan is with me. We're going to talk about Pulp, his new book. Don't go away until you can get Tim on the line. I'm thrilled that you're here. My friend Tim Hallinan is a terrific noir writer. You know that. You know about Junior Bender and all his other novels. Well, he has a standalone that he's put out called Pulped. And I want to tell you a little bit about this without giving you too much. I'm going to share with you what Bruce DeSilva said. Bruce is an Edgar Award-winning author. He's been a guest on this show. He said, Pulp is at once a gritty private detective yarn, an enchanting fantasy, an unconventional love story, a laugh-out-loud comedy, and an insightful exploration of the nature of storytelling, a triumph of imagination told in prose as precise as a sniper's rifle by a novelist with the soul of a poet. That certainly echoes my feelings, although I'm not quite as eloquent as Bruce at saying it. Pulp is just a fantastic book. I'm so happy to welcome my friend Tim Hallinan back to the show. Tim, welcome back to Authors on the Air. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, and it's really nice to be here.
Thanks. You know, we were supposed to get together a week and a half ago, and I gave you bad directions here, and I apologize for that. And then it's kind of been like an email comedy of errors, like we're writing a script for, I don't know, fall down comedy or something. I gave you a date that didn't match the day of the week, and then you came back and said, well, what time was it? And then we were kind of back and forth on that. I finally decided to use the Earth calendar instead of the one from the science fiction show. So here we are finally, and my apologies again for having to reschedule you before. Let's talk about Pulp. What a great book, and what a crazy twist on writing. So give us the thumbnail on it, because I have so many questions I want to talk to you about.
Okay, well, the very first book I ever had published was about a Topanga Canyon detective, sort of a slacker, named Simeon Grist. And Simeon was interesting to me because, like me, he had gone to college forever, getting one useless degree after another, because he knew how they graded you in college, but he didn't know how they did it in the outside world. And that allowed me, that frame of reference allowed me to bring all sorts of stuff into the Simeon books, of which there were eventually six. The last one went out in 1995. They got great reviews. They sold in double digits. I mean, maybe 12 or 13 of each. And then that was it. Simeon disappeared. And I went and did a bunch of other things and made enough money so that I would never have to work again except writing. That was my goal for about 7 years. And I came back and I wrote, you know, the Poke Rafferty Bangkok books, and I wrote the Junior Bender books, and I wrote a book that no one knows anything about yet, that's neither of those things. But Simeon kept sort of tugging at my lapel, and I found myself asking, what's he up to? You know, what happens to a fictitious character when all the attention that's being paid to him, his writer's attention, his reader's attention, his publisher's attention, is suddenly no longer there? And I decided that what happened is, and I made this part up, I don't really know whether publishers pulp books, but I made up a rule that when the very last unsold copy of the last book in an unsuccessful series gets pulped to make shopping newspaper newsprint, there's a kind of a, and your detective, who's been kind of asleep ever since you stopped writing him, all of a sudden wakes up. And he's in limbo. And specifically, he's in a very low budget, because this is, after all, genre writing, a very low budget limbo where all his neighbors are failed fictional private eyes. So the first thing that you have to come to grips with is the fact that you're not real. And all the time he was in the books, he thought this was, it was really he. He was really the person who was doing these things. Sometimes he wondered why his dialogue wasn't a little snappier. He says at one point he always wondered why he never got a dame in a raincoat, and he never did. And he realizes that it was his writer's shortcomings. That's why some of his dialogue wasn't so good. But there's one additional complicating factor, which is that when you're up there, so to speak, and someone down here, so to speak, opens one of your books, one of your few remaining readers, there's a connection. And in this case, it takes place in the window in Simeon's rotten little house in Topanga, and he is looking up through the page of the book at the face of the person who's reading him, and he can hear what words are being read, so he knows which book it is. And this, relatively early in the book, he has one of these things. They're called seeings. And he knows that the guy who's reading him is a bookstore employee. This book is really big on bookstore employees, by the way. We love them. In Joshua Tree. Yeah. And he's saying to the cozy detective from Recipe Mysteries, who's spending the afternoon with him, oh, that's Ferdy. He's in a bookstore in Joshua Tree. And a huge pair of hands go around Ferdy's neck. And Ferdy's tongue comes out, and the next thing we know, the book hits the floor, and Ferdy hits the floor in profile on top of the book, and someone is killing Simeon's readers. So it's like a quadruple shock. He isn't real. He's stuck up here, and now someone's killing his readers, and he doesn't have many of them. So what are you going to do? And that's sort of the germ of the rest of what happens in the book. Obviously, it's a lot about what it is to be written. It's a lot about the relationship between writer and reader. It's a lot about the relationship between writer and character, and vice versa, character and writer. And it was the, you know, and I'll tell you this, that I wrote it, I started it almost 6 years ago, and I could not make it work. And I hung it up, and I put it away, and I regretted and regretted and regretted. And then about 8 months ago, I figured out how to make it work. And it's, by the way, it's almost all that little Boy Scout who shows up in like chapter 3, Bradley Zipper,
who was
the welcome
great.
Wagon. Yeah, yeah, and that took about 60 pages of artful, dull exposition about what was going on there, and turned it into one quite funny 7-page scene, and moved everything forward at a much faster speed. And from then on, I just wrote straight through.
Well,
and
Go ahead. No, you continue. You're the guest.
Oh, I'm normally, at this stage of the development and the release of a book, I'm normally really kind of measured in my optimism about how good the book is. But I love this book. I've loved it since I finished it the last time, and I love it now. So I'm really glad it's out there, and I'm really glad you're calling me up to talk about it, because it's very special to me. I mean, I'm not – are you there? Hello? I have lost you. If you're talking to me, I can't hear you at all. God, this is cursed. I'm going to hang on for a minute. If you call me, I'll get a call interruption thing, and we can go back to this. In the meantime,
I keep getting disconnected. I'm sorry, Tim. I don't know. We're you know, in storm country right now. But you know, we've talked about this book the last week when we were chatting about it. This book to me is so interesting because it's not like anything I've ever read, and I have to say that. You know, I read a lot of books, you know that. And this one, even though it's a big book, it actually kind of just zips on by in such a delightful way. There are so many little pieces of this jigsaw puzzle that you put together pretty quickly but it's a big jigsaw puzzle, let's face it. And I really enjoyed the reading of it all. I can't say that a book delighted me as much as this one did, because it's so unusual.
That's really nice of you. Thank you. All I can say is that it's really complicated in some ways, because there are all these different levels of what's real and what isn't. I mean, I think the first sex scene between a fictional and a non-fictional character ever, and they both enjoy it. And I had no idea where I was going when I wrote it, just like I never do. What I knew was he was up there, he was stuck there, he hated knowing that he was fictitious, and somebody was killing his readers. And that was everything I knew. And I wrote the first section of the book, and then I went down to Joshua Tree in the book. Part two is called Joshua Tree. And here was this young woman, Madison. And she was a direct gift from the gods. This is the only time all the books I've ever written, this is the first time I've ever known a character so completely that her first scene is about 5 or 6 pages when she's on alone and we're in and out of her mind. I knew her utterly. I don't know what happened, but she was like born inside me all of a sudden. And she, to me, is one of the really great delights in the book. I just love the character. Uh-oh. We're off again. I'm still here.
I'm sorry. I just keep getting kicked out of my own studio. I have no idea what's going on here. But I want to talk to you a little. I want to talk to you. See, it's payback, you know, for me giving you wrong directions before. I want to talk to you about what's next, because this kind of literary purgatory place that you've put Simi in and then kind of reached out from beyond is a very interesting thing to me. And so I'm curious, is this a one-off, Tim?
You know, I think it probably is. At one point I was playing with the idea of him going down with his best friend up there, a woman named Lobelia something or other, these are gone when I finished writing them, who was the star of a series of cooking mysteries. One of my favorite lines in the book. Each of them was themed to a famous writer, and one of them was Mickey Spillane, and there were recipes at the end of the book, and for Mickey Spillane, she created a meat dessert, and I loved that. But, you know, I was thinking that he might go down and help her do something, but I'm not sure I can do this again. I'm not sure this isn't a one-off, to tell you the truth.
The best one-off I've read, though. It really is. Let me open the switchboard. Call in and say hi to Tim. You know, if I drop off again, I'll come back. But the number is 347-633-9609. You got to hear about this book. You really got to read it. Whoever calls in, I'm going to gift you a copy. Tim also has a new Poe Grafferty book coming out in November called Fool's River. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Because it's a long way off and Tim's going to come back. And he also is part of a compilation of stories, an anthology that he'll tell us about too for Christmas time. But that's for later. Right now, 347-633-9609. Tim, this is a big book. This is a lot of words in this book, but it just slips by effortlessly. When I called you tonight to be on the show, you had been writing all day long. And the first thing you said to me was, I'm glad you called, I'm stuck. How often does that happen to you or to other writers, do you think?
I think it happens. Well, I know that it happens to me at least once every single book I write. I interviewed Cara Black yesterday at a bookstore here in Los Angeles, and she said it happens to her about in one-third of the books. The book just dies on you. And then sooner or later, if you're fortunate, something comes along that reopens it. And often it's a detail. I mean, what I was saying in Pulp, I don't know whether I was still on, was that the young woman named Madison Jefferson, who's down in Joshua Tree, came in when I moved into the real world, and she took over the book. And I just followed her around for about 80 pages. And by the time I realized that I was in love with her and that Simeon was obviously in love with her, I had a new book that had a love interest in it, which was not originally there since I don't know where I'm going when I start a book. But right now I'm writing the seventh, I think, Junior Bender, which is called Darktown, and it's all about darkness, and most of it happens at night, and I am so stuck. Today I moved the story forward about 150 words, and I deleted about 70 of those. So when you call, it's like, you know, being spared from torture.
But you sit, typically you've told me in the past, when you sit down to write, you sit down and you're going to write. There's not, you're not looking at word counts or times or anything like that. You really want to hammer it out, because your books are pretty big. You usually turn in over 100,000 words.
Right.
When you go back to it, it'll be full steam ahead though, right?
Oh, well, God, one certainly hopes so. I mean, the only book I ever had that was ever nominated for an Edgar was a thing called The Queen of Patpong, and that was the first time I'd ever written from a woman's perspective, and it was terrifying to me, and that died so completely that I deleted it from my computer, totally deleted it. And then I realized that all I had to do was start with this female character who has no idea what's in store for her, on her front porch, watching a bar girl from Bangkok with a hot pink suitcase walk through this dirty little village, and that was the beginning of her whole story. And from then on, I wrote it in probably 2.5 months, which for me is really fast. And also, I learned that I prefer writing women to writing men. So it was, you know, you don't know. I don't know. I've had a couple that died irrevocably, irretrievably. They're gone, including a Simeon. But most of the time, they come back.
Interesting. You know, you seem to get your storylines from air. You know, every time I talk to you, you're on a different subject and all, but you do appear to just kind of, I don't know, do you have a daydream about it or a night dream, or do you see an image? You know, your books are so different.
It often begins with an image. I have a theory that writing is not so much like architecture, where you're building something. It's more like archaeology, where you're uncovering something that already exists, but doing it so delicately that you don't break it. Ingmar Bergman once said about that his writing process was that he imagined that there were these brilliant crimson threads at various places sticking up out of his consciousness, and his job was take one of them and pull it out so carefully that it didn't break. And if he did that, he would have the whole story. And that's sort of what it feels like to me. But there are times when, for example, you'll go off in the wrong direction. And all of a sudden you realize that you're in territory you don't want to be in. And it doesn't have anything to do with the feeling you had in your heart when you started to write the book. And that's a sign that you're in trouble. And that's where I am now.
Let's take
Sure.
Let's take a call and see who's calling in. Hi, area code 541. You're live with Tim Hallinan. Who's this?
My name is Everett Kaiser. And
hi, Everett. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm doing pretty good. Yourself?
Good. Welcome to Authors on the Air. You have a question or a comment for Tim?
I do. I was wondering how long it took to write Pulped the first time and how long it took to write the second time. And which one was easier?
It took longer the first time than the second time. The second time, of course, I had the framework the second time, and I all of a sudden realized that the fictional Tim Hallinan was an important character in the book. And once I had him and I was using him as a character, everything just came together really well. I mean, you're not going to like him in the book. You've read it. I mean, you know, he's not the best guy in the world, but that made a huge difference to me because it was like I knew whose mind was running everything that was happening down in Joshua Tree.
I was going to ask you how much of you put into yourself in the book. Yes, I have.
Have you actually? Oh, okay, good. All right.
I was actually fortunate enough to read both versions, both the first version and the second version. It's very interesting, the changes that he made.
Everett keeps nailing it. Everett remembers more about my books than I do.
Okay, so Everett, let's talk about that. What is the biggest change you saw from the first book to the one that is out right now?
Pretty much what Tim mentioned, which was the excision of about 80 or 100 pages off the front of the book.
Uh-huh.
Which was the first time I read it, he gave it to, I don't know how many people, but he gave it to at least several people to read. And I was lucky to be one of those. And he wanted feedback on it. And I tried to be honest with him. I said, I like the book a whole lot.
Always a mistake.
I said I like the book a whole lot, but the beginning of it just seemed kind of slow. And particularly because I've read science fiction and fantasy much of my life. So the whole idea of this fictional private eye who's woken up to realize that he's fictional and is looking down at the real world wasn't a big leap for me. So, you know, I wasn't sure whether it would be for your average person that hasn't read much fantasy and science fiction, but it just seemed really slow to me.
And it was.
Yep. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because that's the writer's kiss of death when it comes to a book. If it doesn't grab you right in the beginning, readers just, if they're saying, okay, come on, get to the story, then it's a problem. But you know what kicked in for me, and I don't know, I mean, of course, I love Tim's books anyway, but when I was reading this, the introduction of the Boy Scout just made everything take off. It just was like a sprint right from there, where it had been, you know, and not that far into the book, it's at the beginning of the book, but it definitely changes the whole tone of things, because I was trying to figure out what the heck was going on. Did you like the Boy Scout character?
Oh, yeah. I had read the first version, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and I had actually just been... I had been thinking off and on, you know, it's been a long time since I read that. I wonder what it would be like the second time through. And I'd been thinking about rereading the original cut that Tim had sent to me. And just about then, Tim sends me an email, says, hey, would you like to read through the revised version? And so it was a perfect timing.
That's a little weird.
I have to admit that it was the second time through, the first time through the second revision was wonderful. It flowed through, and I was tickled pink with the whole book.
Okay, that's great to hear. That's great to hear.
I think that really early in a book, even before the reader begins to judge how interesting the story is or how good the characters are, the writer either does or does not create an atmosphere of trust, and the reader says, I want to keep reading this guy. I think he's going to deliver. And and that, for me, is the most important thing to do in the first 30 or 40 pages of the book. You have to relax the reader. I'm not going to stiff you. It's not going to be twins. It's not going to be, you know, Colonel Mustard with pinking shears in the conservatory.
Right.
It's going to be what it seems to
be.
Right. And that scene with Bradley Zipper, the Boy Scout, did that for me.
Yes.
It consolidated everything that I thought the reader needed to know.
You know, it's true, because when you sent this to me, Tim, it was like you could hear the gears come together, because I wasn't really sure what was happening. I had an idea of what was happening, but I wasn't. But when Bradley Zipper comes into the scene. After that, like I say, they let the horses out of the chute, and it was off for this wild, wonderful ride. So, Everett, thank you so much for calling in. I so appreciate it. I'd like to say, are you a Kindle reader by any chance?
I am, but you don't need to send me a copy. I've already got an e-book.
Oh, I don't want to send.
And a paper book.
I'm sure you do. I'd love to send you a gift card, though, for calling in. Would you please go to Authors on the Air on Facebook Or you can send me an email. It's pam@authorsontheair.com. And give me your email address. I'm going to send you a gift card to thank you for calling in.
Pam at Authors on the Air.
Pam at AuthorsOnTheAir.com. Yes, Pam.
Okay.
At AuthorsOnTheAir.com. Okay.
Pam.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Very good. Okay. Bye, Everett.
Good to talk to you, Tim. Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.
Aha.
Yeah, this,
so there you go.
Guy,
I like this.
This guy, this guy has created the book of Junior Bender, the book of Poe Rafferty. They're huge bound volumes of everything that's been in all the books, organized book by book, the characters, what pages they show up on, physical descriptions, dates, timelines, everything. I couldn't write anymore without using them. I turn to them all the time when I'm working.
Your Bible.
He's phenomenal. He's phenomenal.
Wow. Every writer needs an Everett then, for sure.
Absolutely.
Because
I often
wonder how people keep all their characters and the storylines and the peripheral characters all, you know, and on the correct timeline, and, you know, like Junior's birthday is always in January. How do you remember that, you know, and the little things that you talk about. That's interesting, very interesting. Let's briefly talk about Fool's River because, first of all, it's a beautiful book. Great cover art, as
Thank
usual.
You,
you know, very Tim Hallinan looking. But I like the fact that we've got another Poke book now, and I'll settle in to read that soon. Talk briefly about this one, please.
Sure. I wanted to do something in Fool's River that I had never done before, which was to tell, I didn't know how many stories, but it turned out to be four, that all went from beginning to end within 48 hours. So that essentially the reader never had a chance to stop. And in fact, it worked out to be about 36 hours. I had a character from an earlier book, a little transvestite from Laos, who was very important in the last book in the series, who just a walk-on, but she was important. And she became the opening scene in the book is this girl, and she's a girl to herself, buying lavender contact lenses because she's always wanted to be not a Lao boy and not even a Thai girl, but a white girl. And that contact lens scene spins into three stories. And how this happened, I don't know, but it happened. And at the same time, Pope's wife, Rose, is pregnant. And Pope knows that she used to dance in the bars on the Bad Street in Bangkok, Patpong Road. He knows everything about it. What he doesn't know is that she's had three miscarriages. She's carried three other men's children. And she's pregnant now. She's been pregnant for two books, and she's about to miscarry again. And she's terrified. So there's one whole thread of the book that is Rose and a clutch of women, three or four women, who are all totally with her and going through whether this baby's whether the pregnancy's going to end now or not. And there's a love affair between Meow and this boy, and there's a guy who's been kidnapped. The boy's father has been kidnapped by people who they go and they get these sex hounds who go to Bangkok. They put them into what it looks like a hospital. They put casts on their legs, and they milk all their credit cards and their checking accounts. And then they throw them into a canal, and they're found floating face down with casts on their legs, and their legs aren't broken. So all of those stories and another one all happened within 36 hours. And once I started the clock ticking, it all came so fast, I couldn't believe it. It was one of the ones that people like to say it wrote itself. This is one of the ones that almost did.
Uh-huh.
And I really liked the book. I mean, there's a scene in which Rose has gone to meet an old friend of hers whom she once danced with, and she's standing at the edge of a little road they're going to eat on, which has Thai food stands, and all of a sudden she gets really dizzy, and she has to lean against a building, and a woman and a little boy materialize, and the woman is an American nurse, and she becomes essentially the thing that Rose hangs on to for most of the book. I didn't know she was coming, but she's wonderful. And her little son, Willis, is just sensational. So, you know, the characters like that are a gift. You're working You're working to try to do something, and all of a sudden you open up a little tiny idea, and inside it is a person who just takes over and walks the stage and says the lines, and you just write as fast as you can. You know, Anne Lamott, in the best book I know about writing, which is called Bird by Bird, says there's the big difference is the difference between making it up and getting it down. And what you're trying to do, what I'm trying to do all the time when I'm writing, is to get past the point where I'm making it up and get to the point where I'm getting it down as fast as I can before it's over so I don't miss any of it. And that book, that whole book came at me so fast that I could hardly breathe. Whereas Pulp is about a 7-year gestation period. So it's very different, and yet I don't think Pulp reads like it took a long time to write. I mean, I hope it doesn't. I think
it
reads pretty fast.
No, it does. It does, indeed. You know, Tim, it occurs to me as I listen to you talk about your stories that you are a very enthusiastic writer. And I don't mean you sit down and you're all, oh, Jojo, happy, happy, but you really do like being a writer, don't you?
Oh, it's the best thing in the world. It's the best job in the world. You know.
I don't know. I could fight with you over that. I think mine is, go ahead. I want to hear your thought on that. Yeah. No. You're the guest. You talk.
I've had a long life. I've read a million books. I have met everyone in the world I ever wanted to meet. I've met everyone from Katharine Hepburn to Bill Clinton. I've met everybody. I've worked with thousands of people I admire. And all this stuff is in there, in this sort of primordial stew. And writing allows you to treat it as ingredients, to treat it as material. For me, to think, okay, I've got a pregnant woman who's afraid she's going to lose her baby. Now, I happen to have known three people who went through that. And all of a sudden, they're right there with me. You know, it's one of the most amazing processes in the world, because you're opening up all this stuff that's not neatly filed. You don't know where to look for it. But when you need it, bam,
sure,
there it is most of the time.
There it is.
So, you know, I have never heard
anyone talk so eloquently about writing. I have to tell you, it's a pleasure listening to you talk about it, because I guess in a sense, you do take your collective experience and you are writing what you know, which is, what someone always sounds like a cliche, but the fact of the matter is, in your case, you are writing the things that you know, and they're the sum of your experiences and all, and that's an amazing thing. And the topper is, Tim, they're so bloody good. You know,
thank you.
Makes it even better. Congratulations on Pulped. What a fun book. I hope I get to see you soon. You know, if not,
next time
around. How long are you staying in the States?
Probably through November. Are you going to be at BoucherCon?
I'm not going this year, no. I'm going to go because it's practically in my...
The most recent junior is up for the Seamus. Fields where they lay is up for
God.
The Seamus. And I normally don't go to BoucherCon, but I'm thinking about it, because although the field is so strong, the writers are so good that I haven't got a chance. But it's a
glorious thing. I love seeing all the new faces, and I like the fact that it now really is a horse race. It hasn't been for a long time, but I love it. And I hope that if you don't go to this one, you'll come in 18, because it's in my backyard in St. Pete, and I'd love to see you again. It's been a long time. Get my book signed. Get my book signed. That
absolutely.
Would be, you know,
absolutely.
That would
I'll
be a
warm
good
up
thing.
My
I'm telling you. Tim Hallinan, the book is Pulped. Tell us where we can find you on the web and where we can find you on social media.
I'm at timothyhallinan.com. I'm on Facebook as Tim Hallinan, I think. I don't know. I'm on Facebook all the time.
Yes, you are.
90% politics.
Yes, you are.
So if you're a huge Donald Trump fan, don't go to me on Facebook, because you won't like me anymore. And I'm on Twitter because I have to be, although it's sort of fun. But, you know, there's one more thing about writing that I want to say. I think it is important to write what you know. And I think it's great to know a lot of stuff when you're writing because it's all material. But in some ways, I think the most important thing is to write what you want to know more about. You want to write something that you're going to learn from exploring it, and it has to be something you want to know more about. And about half the joy of writing, half of it is looking at the page and thinking, God, I actually got something here. I actually got some energy on this page. What this person just said, I didn't make that up. She said it. The other thing is the feeling of thinking, I have learned so much right now in the last week or two. So, you know, I all I can say is everybody who thinks they want to write a book should write a book, period. It will change
your
life. Writing a book is a life-changing experience, whether it's any good or not. My first one was dreadful.
Well, everybody tells me that. That's the one they shove in the bottom of the drawer or put a caster on and drop in the lake, right? Whether it's broken or not. So, Tim Hallinan, you are the best. Thank you, my friend, for being my guest today. My best to your wife. And keep writing.
Thank you.
Keep writing.
I
love
so
every
much.
Bit of it. Have a wonderful weekend. And, folks, thank you for joining me today and the wonderful Tim Hallinan, who is terrific. I want to say thank you to Down and Out Books, who sponsored this show. They are celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction, noir crime fiction particularly. You can find them at www.downandoutbooks.com. And thanks again, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night, all.